ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರಧಾರಿ
His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada ki. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. Namo Shivadaya Krishna Krishna Bhaktivedanta Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada ki. Namaste Sanatana Devi Vedanta Bhaktivedanta Bhaktivedanta Bhaktivedanta
ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ
This morning we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Schedule Incarnations, text number 49.
Sashe yasam api vibhur bhagavan yathosya.
Sashe yasam api vibhur bhagavan yathosya.
Bhava swabhava vihitasya sata prasiddhi.
Bhava swabhava.
देहे स्वधातु विगमेनु विषीयमाने व्योमेव तत्र पुरुषो न विषीयते जा
सिद्धि व्योमेव तत्र पुरुषो न विशीयते सता प्रसिद्धि व्योमेव तत्र पुरुषो न विशीयते सश्रेयसमपि विभुर्भगवान् यतोऽस्य भावस्वभावविहितस्य सता प्रसिद्धि देहे स्वधातु विगमेनु विषीयमाने व्योमेव तत्र पुरुषो न विशीयते सश्रेयसामपि विभुर्भगवान् यतोऽस्य भावस्वभावविहितस्य सता प्रसिद्धि देहे स्वधातु विगमेनु विशीयमाने
Dehe swadhatu vigamenu shiryamane.
Vyome vatatra purusho na vishiryate ja.
Vyome vatatra purusho na vishiryate ja.
Thank you. Word to word. Sa, he, shreyasam, all auspiciousness, api, also, vibhu, the master, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, yataha, because, asya, of the living entity, bhava, natural mode, swabhava, own constitution, vihitasya, performances, sataha, all good work, prasiddhi, ultimate success, dehe, of the body, swadhatu, forming elements, vigame, being vanquished, anu, after, vishiryamane, having given up, vyoma, sky, iva, like, tatra, thereupon, purushaha, the living entity, na, never, vishiryate, becomes vanquished, ajaha, due to being unborn. Translation in purport, Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead is the supreme master of everything auspicious, because the results of whatever actions are performed by the living being in either the material or spiritual existence are awarded by the Lord. As such, he is the ultimate benefactor. Every individual living entity is unborn, and therefore even after the annihilation of the material elementary body, the living entity exists exactly like the air within the body. Purport. The living entity is unborn and eternal, and as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2.30, the living entity is not exhausted even though the material elementary body is vanquished. As long as the living entity is in material existence, actions performed by him are rewarded in the next life, or even in the present life. Similarly, in his spiritual life, or also actions are rewarded by the Lord by the five kinds of liberation. Even the impersonalist cannot achieve the desired merging into the existence of the Supreme without being favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.11 that the Lord awards similar results as one desires in one's present life. The living entities are given freedom to make their choice, and the Lord awards them accordingly. It is the duty of everyone, therefore, to worship devoutly only the Supreme Personality of Godhead to achieve his desired goal. The impersonalist, instead of speculating or meditating, can directly execute the routine devotional service of the Lord and thus easily obtain the desired goal. The devotees, however, are naturally inclined to become associates of the Lord and not merge in the spiritual existence. Following their constitutional instincts, achieve the desired goal of becoming servitors, friends, fathers, mothers, or conjugal lovers of the Lord. The devotional service of the Lord involves 9 transcendental processes, such as hearing and chanting. And by performing such easy and natural devotional services, the devotees achieve the highest perfectional results, far, far superior to merging into the existence of Brahman. The devotees are therefore never advised to indulge in speculating upon the nature of the Supreme or artificially meditating on the void. One should not, however, mistakenly think that after the annihilation of the present body, there is no body by which one can associate with the Lord face to face. The living entity is unborn. It is not that he is manifest with the creation of the material body. On the other hand, it is true that the material body develops only by the desire of the living entity. The evolution of the material body is due to the desires of the living being. According to the desires of the living being, the material body develops. So, from the spirit soul, the material body comes into existence, generated from the living force. Since the living being is eternal, he exists just like the air within the body. Air is within and without the body. Therefore, when the external covering, the material body, is vanquished, The living spark, like the air within the body, continues to exist. And by the direction of the Lord, because he is the ultimate benefactor, the living entity is at once awarded the necessary spiritual body befitting his association with the Lord in the manner of sarupya, equal bodily feature, salokya, equal facility to live on the same planet with the Lord, sarshti, equal possession of opulence like the Lord, and samipya, equal association with the Lord. The Lord is so kind that even if a devotee of the Lord cannot fulfill the complete course of devotional service, unalloyed and uncontaminated by material association, he is given another chance in the next life by being awarded a birth in the family of a devotee or rich man, so that without being engaged in the struggle for material existence, the devotee can finish the remaining purification of his existence. And thus, immediately after relinquishing the present body, go back home, back to Godhead. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. In this connection, detailed information is available in Bhagavad Sandarbha of Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada. Once achieving the spiritual existence, the devotee is eternally situated there, as already discussed in the previous verse. Namaham Shivadaya Kishavashaya Bhutaleshamatai Bhakti Vedanta Swamati Namaya Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nivishishishane Vadikashatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpataru Bhashya Kripasana Devi Chapatita Nam Pavine Bhivashana Devi Namaha. So here, Lord Brahma, after describing the scheduled incarnations, is describing some qualities of his Lord. And one such is, he says, as such he is the ultimate benefactor. Prabhupada repeats the same words here. Sri Krishna is our ultimate benefactor. And certainly Srimad Bhagavatam, I was thinking, is our ultimate benefactor. And that is, you can see the fact that we have Srimad Bhagavatam, it shows Krishna's kindness upon us living entities by giving us Srimad Bhagavatam. In the first canto, this is in the second canto, we have scheduled incarnations. But even in the first canto, if you remember, in the third chapter, in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, the third chapter, we have, there's a whole description of incarnations there too. Sutta Goswami, when he responds to Shaunaka Rishi, the sage's questions, so right away he gets into describing that Krishna is the source of all incarnations. And in that list of incarnations, in the very, very end, he describes that Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation. Idam Bhagavata Nama Puranam Brahma Samitam. So he's saying idam. Idam means this. So he doesn't have a book there, this, but what he's going to come out and share with the sages, he's saying this is Srimad Bhagavatam and this is Nishreyasaya Lokasya. This is for the benefit of everybody. This is something that that Sri Krishna has left after he has. We also hear about Sutta Goswami expresses that the question was asked, what happened when Krishna left this planet? And response is that when Krishna left this planet, he took actually jnana and dharma with him and everything else along. Krishna left, when he left, everybody else left, so to speak, with him. So what happens to the people we are left here, especially people of Kali Yuga? So it's not, Krishna is our ultimate benefactor. He thinks about all of us all the time. No matter how wretched we are, he's always thinking about us. And especially if we are really wretched, he really thinks about us. And so he left this Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna Swadhama धामोपगते धर्म ज्ञानदिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृश्यम् एष पुराणार्को अधुनोदितः. सो दिस् भागवतम् दट् हेज् कम् टु अस् इस् एक्चुलि प्रिटि अमेजिङ्ग्. ऐ वास् थिङ्किङ्ग् अबौट् श्रीमद्भागवतम्. इफ् यु रियलि थिङ्क् अबौट् श्रीमद्भागवतम् एस् अ पर्सन्, दि ओन्लि activity the Bhagavatam does is glorify Krishna. That's all comes out of his mouth, is glorification of Krishna. But that's not it only. The Bhagavatam speaks, but it also inspires others to glorify Krishna. When Vyasadeva compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, he was really thinking that he was thinking actually for his son, Sukadeva Goswami, to present this Bhagavatam. But, you know, we know Sukadeva Goswami left. But Vyasadeva made sure at a certain time, he said, okay, he has to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So although Sukadeva Goswami was Atmaram, he was self-satisfied. But when Vyasadeva arranged for him to hear the Bhagavatam, he got attracted. And then what did he do? He spoke the Bhagavatam. And when Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit heard. And then what did Maharaj Parikshit do? He was about to leave his body. But what did he do? He spoke the Bhagavatam to his mother. And others who listened, Sukadeva Goswami, he was there. We are hearing him. He spoke the Bhagavatam to the sages. But it's not only just the great personalities, those Mahajans, when they hear the Bhagavatam, they want to repeat it. It's the people on the street, when they read the Bhagavatam, they want to repeat it. I was just last week, in our little gathering we have, Varuna was reminding, and I had forgotten that, but he was saying that I wasn't able to join, so I was just practicing at a home. And so he was reminding me, and he wasn't a devotee at that stage, but I would bring a Bhagavatam at the house, and I would sit down and read the Bhagavatam. And it was so exciting for me that, you know, I was going to university, and so I would go and preach to my friends. It was just so exciting. Although I had a real reason behind why I was, besides that I was enthusiastic, I wanted really my brother Runa to listen to it. So whenever I would speak, I would make sure he was there in the background, because, you know, we are twins, so we went to the same school, same class, everything. So my friends, his friends, they were all same. So I would share it, and he would hear it. And he would see me that, oh my God, how does she know this, all this, what she speaks? And he was just telling me. He said, yeah, I would see you, and then you would bring another Bhagavatam, another book, you know, fat book, and then that would disappear, and then you bring another colored Bhagavatam. I mean, I do remember I read up to six cantos when I was at home. But I was repeating, and he was getting attracted. And so he also came to Krishna consciousness. I think we can all see that how Srimad Bhagavatam is such an amazing book that even neophyte people, I don't know anything, I was just repeating whatever I heard, or whatever my realization was, I expressed it. And so this is Srimad Bhagavatam. It just, this is Krishna's actually being our ultimate benefactor, that he actually has given us Srimad Bhagavatam. Here Srila Prabhupada is saying, he's saying here, Srila Prabhupada has made so many points here in this purport. I was reading, I'm like, wow, I got so many points. But Srila Prabhupada is saying that, on the other hand, it is true that the material body develops only by the desire of the living entity. So our body, and just how I see what Srila Prabhupada is saying, that it is according to our desire that we get the body that we have. And so Srila Prabhupada here is encouraging us to develop right desire. And sometimes we don't know what is the right desire, you know, what is our goal. You ask a little child, what do you want to do when you grow up? They don't know. They'll say this or that. Maybe they'll say, generally they'll say what their father is doing or what their mother is doing. But here, Srila Prabhupada is saying that it's important that we develop proper desire. And he not only says proper desire, he comes out and says, I thought it was very interesting. He says, if I can find it. Okay. He says here, the devotees, however, are naturally inclined to become associates of the Lord. So, who amongst us naturally feel inclined to become associates of the Lord? To become, Prabhupada writes here, the devotees, therefore, following their constitutional instincts, achieve the desired goal of becoming servitors, friends, fathers, mothers, or conjugal lovers of the Lord. So, Srila Prabhupada here, while he's saying that Krishna is our ultimate benefactor and he will give us not just our material desires, through our material desires we get this particular body, but he's saying here in the first paragraph, he says that whatever spiritual desires we have, Krishna even fulfills that. So therefore, he's making the point that we have to cultivate proper desires, proper spiritual desires. He's saying not devotee does not merge into the spiritual existence. Although sometimes, as we get older or we have disease, body is diseased, it becomes a liability. Sometimes we think, oh, the professor was laughing, but yeah, sometimes we desire to just merge, to just get rid of this body, just to become, you know, when there's difficulties or whatever. Sometimes we may desire that. But we are trained properly by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that no, we devotees naturally are inclined to become associates of the Lord. And so I was thinking that let's kind of think about this, about being naturally inclined and following their constitutional instincts. The devotees, therefore, following their constitutional instincts. For me, it was a little hard to understand what does that mean, constitutional instinct. Anybody would like to say? Yes, Titi Muni Prabhu. Essential to the what?
Project. Or in this case, essential to the project. Like they say, the constitutional principles of the United States. It means it's something essential to the United States.
Okay, essential to the project, you're saying.
Yeah, so, I mean, putting myself out on a limb here, but essential, it seems like it's essential to the being of the jiva.
Mm-hmm.
And they're recalling it. They're pulling up their essential instincts that are currently covered over.
Okay, thank you. You had something to add to that, or your own thoughts on constitutional instinct? Could you? I don't know this devotee's name.
Krishnadas.
Krishnadas. Yes, Prabhu.
I think maybe something like intuition or conscience, which is more aligned with the universal soul or the Paramatman than the individual personal desire.
Okay, individual personal desire. Yes, I had asked Srila Prabhu about what that meant, and he said, basic motivating. So following their constitutional instinct, the devotees, therefore, following their constitutional instinct, achieve the desired goal. And so I thought, here it is, Prabhupada is training us that this is, because we're so covered over, we don't know what is our constitutional instinct, but we have to be told that. So we've been hearing about constitutional instinct in the sense of Prabhupada saying that these are the relationships that one a devotee desires. And so I thought it might be a very good idea. I have very limited time here, but I thought that in order to develop that desire to be one of the, we say, four servitors, friends, fathers, mothers, conjugal lovers, those are that mentioned here, it's important that we hear about these pastimes. Just like you would like to train a young child, if you want them to become a doctor, it's you have to train them from young. Or maybe they, we were at Prem Sankirtan Prabhu's house, and he was saying that how his father was a doctor, and his grandfather was a doctor. It's when they see that kind of atmosphere around, then you desire to do so. And so if we hear about these relationships that we are supposed to be naturally inclined towards, then I think it's important that we hear about it. And so this is Maharaj Parikshit. I'm going to read something from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This is what Maharaj Parikshit repeated to his mother after he heard the Bhagavatam. And it's interesting. We don't see what he said exactly that in the Bhagavatam, but this is what he expressed. And so these were what was revealed to him after he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. And so this portion, if you know Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is a description of, this is the second volume, this is a description of Gopakumara's journey, who is also a sadhaka. And that's very important for us to remember. He's a sadhaka who had firm faith in his mantra chanting that his guru gave to him. And how this sadhaka, by having firm faith in what his spiritual master gave to him, his ultimate benefactor, Krishna, being the ultimate benefactor who gave him the guru. And this is what he expressed after hearing from Sutta Goswami to his mother. So I'm just going to read some little excerpts so that we can meditate on this. And maybe one day we might be able to desire a particular to serve a particular in a particular relationship, whether it's in Dasya Ras or whether it's in Vatsalya or Madhurya or any of those. Ultimately, we will be in that state. Not that we do artificially, properly saying naturally. It has to come naturally. That means it will come in time. So this portion that I'm going to read to you is just what happens there on a daily basis. This happens on a daily basis. Krishna then finished his pastime of sleep, and his mother bathed him, adorned him with ornaments, and fed both him and Balaram. Is that something we do here every day on the altar? He goes to sleep, then somebody wakes them up, and they get bathed, and then they get dressed. So that's why deity worship is so important. Anyway, so this is what happens. She, that is Mother Yashoda, made Krishna relax a short while, and he enjoyed talking with the gopis. Then she got things ready for his auspicious departure to the forest. Though the young gopis were pained at heart at the thought of soon being separated from Krishna, Mother Yashoda had them sing transcendental songs for his good fortune and ceremoniously carry full pots and other auspicious items. She sat Krishna on a chair with his elder brother and adorned their limbs with ornaments, medicinal herbs suitable for the forest. I was just trying to relate to it that, like, you know, if somebody is going into the forest, you might spray what you call mosquito repellent or, you know, whatever nowadays what they have. But here, Mother Yashoda is thinking he's going to the forest, so she put medicinal herbs suitable for the forest. She engaged elderly Brahmin ladies and other ladies in offering blessings. And she made Krishna do all the prescribed rituals to prepare his outing. Krishna took the lunch his mother gave him for noontime. So in other words, he had his breakfast. And so that was for noontime. Stirred the cows from their rest and got them in front of him and set off playing his flute. Just then his companions came out in groups from the cowherd village and gathered around him. You can see the boys all excited. They're going to go to the forest away from their parents. What boys are not excited about it? Young boys, yeah? They can do any mischief. The boys were all fit to be his intimate friends. At one moment, he and the boys played their flutes. At another, and another, their buffalo horns. And at still another, some instruments fashioned from leaves. Thus he and the boys showed off by playing various kinds of music. That's what boys do. They like to show off. So they're showing off at each other. Hey, I can do the leaves, I can do this, that, whatever. Krishna stood with his brother while their friends played things in hand, joyfully sang, danced, and glorified them. Krishna's elder brother walked in front, and I meaning Gopakumar, who is there now as Sarup, and I walked behind. And the girls, unable to tolerate being separated from Krishna, found excuses to follow and came out from the village helplessly, pulled by ropes of love. So you see all there, those three rasas are we seeing here, Vatsalya Ras, Madhurya Ras, and Sakya Ras. All those three we are hearing about that. Mother Yashoda saw Krishna perspiring from a mood of ecstasy and came to wipe his face and went with him as far as the outer gates of village, her breasts wet with milk. At his request, she then turned back towards the house. So he told his mom, please go back, it's our turn to go and play in the forest, so you don't come. But after two or three steps, she craned her neck and anxiously went back to her son. She made pan for him and put some in his mouth and some in his hand, and then again turned towards the house. But once again, she quickly came back to him. The love that Mother Yashoda has. Right on the path, she fed him some fruits. So he's going. Come on, Mom, let him go. But no, some palm? No, not some fruits. And so she fed him some fruits and some other sweet things and gave him something to drink. Then she again started going back to the house. But you think she just left? No. She then again turned around. She gave him a thorough looking over and adjusted his clothes. She adjusted his clothes and the other things he had on, and then she once more turned back. But then again she returned and plaintively gave him some instructions. Now, some instructions. My dear child, don't go too far into the impenetrable woods and never enter deep into the forest where there are thorns. After speaking this way at length, so there are only two lines given here, but she gave him a good speech. After speaking this way at length, beseeching him to take care, she once again turned home and took a few steps and yet again came back. My dear boy Ram, she said, you stay in front of your younger brother, and you, Sridham, stay behind your friend Krishna with Sarup. You stay, I can't see the name anyway, this other young boy, he said, you should stay on Krishna's right, and you, Subal, on his left. straw between her teeth, she implored the boys with such a request. Then she looked intently at her son. In this way, Mother Yashoda, anxiously going back and forth again and again, showed more love than a cow who has just given birth to a calf. That is just so sweet. Her son then bowed down to her, took hold of her feet. I think this is just too sweet. Her son then bowed down to her, took hold of her feet, and embraced her. And with various rationales, and finally with words of insistence of his own, with great effort, he made her turn back. So this is what got him. Like, okay, Mom, please go back now. I touch your feet, I embrace you, I do everything. Now you go back. So, seems like she did. And she, crying, milk dripping from her breast, stood right there, motionless, like a painted picture, and distantly watched from that high place near the forest. You think that, you know, he's going across the country for, you know, a few months, or he's going to Mathura. I mean, this happens every single day. Every single day. This whole drama happens. I mean, this is just Mother Yashoda's love. So, what about the gopis? But the lovely gopis, so we're talking about the different relationship. We're hearing this, so hopefully one day, naturally, following our constitutional instinct, we will know in which way that we will serve our dear Lord. So these lovely gopis kept following him. Their throats choked with weeping. They could no longer sing nor see. Remember, Mother Yashoda had engaged them to sing. So they could no longer sing nor see through their streams of tears, and their feet stumbled. In their shyness and fear, they had nothing they could do or say. Drowning in a great ocean of sorrow, they had no way to hold back their feelings. Krishna had stolen the hearts and the eyes of these young girls. The girls had come so far from the cowherd village, and now with some endeavor, he stopped them. And as they looked at him, he repeatedly tried to send them home. So he also had to tell the gopis, okay, it's time for you to go back and stop following. He had to reassure them. He anxiously reassured them again and again through a trusted messenger and by his own gestures. So this is how he reciprocated with the gopis, or he got them to stay back. Now you may wonder, where was Nanda Maharaj? What is Nanda Maharaj's reaction to Krishna going to the forest? Is he kind of like in his, I don't know, in his palace sitting there? What is he doing? In case you want to be a servant and the servant of a servant of the servant of Nanda Maharaj. So this is how Nanda Maharaj reacts. Nanda, the king of the cowherds, naturally loved Krishna ever so much. But upon seeing his wife's loving concern, he was enslaved by overwhelming affection. I was thinking here, this is the effect of association, even in the spiritual world. When you see a devotee feeling very enthusiastic, you feel enthusiastic. If a devotee is serving nicely, you want to do the same. You're affected by it naturally. It's a natural thing. So here you see Nanda Maharaj, who has so much affection for Krishna. But Maharaj Pariksit says that upon seeing his wife's loving concern, he was enslaved by overwhelming affection. It just reminded me of, there is in the Krishna book, there is some pastime, I think it was Krishna's birthday or something, that the ladies were throwing, in happiness, they were throwing yogurt and other milk products on each other. And then the cowherd men also, watching them, they also started doing that. Ladies are intelligent or are more fun. They really like to get into it. Anyway, so here it is. this is Nanda Maharaj. Though Nanda Maharaj had gone with Krishna a great distance, and the elder cowherds with him, when Nanda saw the great burden of love of all the people of Raja bore for his son, he was unable to turn back. So can you imagine? He's the father and he's the king, and he's seeing all this affection that all the Brajvasis have for his son. It was just like so much for him. So Nanda was delighted to see many auspicious omens and see the animals, other creatures, all very happy. Yet he was distraught at having to be parted from his son Krishna. Again and again he embraced Krishna and Krishna's elder brother, both separately and together. So these are some things that we can remember as we hug each other, or we sometimes in our ladies' meeting we do a group hug. And so there's a group hug here going on between Nanda Maharaj and Krishna and Balaram. He gave them separately and then together, and then he smelled their heads and shed tears in the pain of great love for them. Then Krishna bowed down to Nanda. Again, Krishna is so respectful. He's such a gentleman. He bowed down to Nanda, reminded him. Okay, so he also had to kind of, okay, Baba, it's time for you to go. So he bowed down to Nanda, reminded him of the many duties Nanda had to perform, and sent him home. So he had to send him home. So not that Nanda went, so Krishna had to send him home. Turned back, Nanda stood motionless, looking at Krishna's and nothing else. Looking at Krishna and nothing else. When Nanda's two sons had gone so deep into the forest, he could no longer see them or hear any sound. He finally turned back towards the cowherd village. But that was not the end. He's just gone to the forest, but look what Nanda Maharaj does. He deputed some servants as messengers to bring news of what Krishna was doing. Their love for their little Krishna. He had some messengers to go back and forth. I don't know how many hours they went, but those hours seemed to the Brajvasis years. And so he had messengers go there and to bring news. And then after that, he consoled his wife and the gopis and took them back to their homes. So this is what Srila Prabhupada is saying, that devotees are naturally inclined to become associates of the Lord, following their constitutional instincts. I mean, there's so much nectar here that I wanted to read, but time is up. One of the things that's described here Sanatana Goswami says in his commentary, that the cowherd boys express their intimate love for Krishna in everything they did, including their eating and ordinary household chores. So hearing these pastimes, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we can just pray that one day, that following our constitutional instinct, we will know how we want to serve in a particular mood. And in that way, Krishna, our ultimate benefactor, will fulfill our desires. Like Srila Prabhupada says, yeyatamam prapadyante, the Lord awards similar results as one desires in one's present life. So these are some thoughts this morning from this verse. Anybody would like to ask any questions? Yes, Mother Sukada?
Thank you for a wonderful class. I was going to comment on the word instinct, because I recently heard Srila Prabhupada talking about that word. He was with some other devotees, and they were conversing about how birds, you know, they automatically fly south, and they use this word instinct. And Prabhupada said, instinct, what is this word? What does it mean? He said, it's super soul. It's super soul that's directing them, you know, so... it's our constitutional condition of listening really to Supersoul, you know, to guide us.
Thank you. That clears that, yes, when is the right time? When we have become purified, when our anarthas are gone, then at the right time, the Supersoul within our heart will guide us. But not before that, therefore we don't do anything artificially. Not that we artificially start thinking this way or that way, but no, the Supersoul will guide us in time. Any other thoughts on this subject matter? Vegvati?
Hare Krishna, I always love your classes.
Thank you.
It got so much nectar on the way over here, but why I was coming was because you said early on that sometimes devotees also want to merge when they're too much stress in their lives or something. So I just flashed back to a time very early in my devotional service. I had joined in Hawaii. The temple I was living in split from ISKCON, so I was still there doing everything the same, but it wasn't ISKCON anymore. After some time, I just want to tell one little piece of it. I went to live for a little while in this place called Kalalau Valley. It's at the end of the road on Kauai, and you have to actually hike 8 miles to get back there, or take a boat or a helicopter. So I'd gone there, and I was set up a little place to live, lean to or something. But in the hiking of the 8 miles, I had a pack on my back so I could have many different things. By the time I got there, my whole body was in so much pain. And I remembered someone had told of a meditation technique where you like lie down flat and relax first your toes and very slowly go up the whole body. So I did that. And something went out the top of my head, and I actually felt completely relaxed. But when it went out the top of my head, I was like, oh, is this liberation? How boring. Because we've been hearing all about Krishna and, you know, all these wonderful pastimes, like you were telling the ladies throwing yogurt on each other. Yeah, I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
Your class was just so wonderful.
Thank you. That's nice. Yeah, it's nice that we're able to. Krishna's very kind. I know, I hope Dandakesh doesn't mind me saying this, but she told me that one time, you know, she got the Bhagavad Gita and she was like, wow, this God is just like, worship me. And then, but then she got the Krishna book and then she just was in love with Krishna, this little boy and he's all his adventures. Yeah, I mean, Krishna's adventures are just so fun. Yeah. Yes, Hemavati.
Yeah, I'm reflecting on what you said, and in a certain way we have to force ourselves to do things artificially to awaken this love, because deity worship and all that is all about, you know, getting into the idea of the pastimes, feeding him, and although we are not at all at that level. So I felt, well, in a certain sense, we have to do it artificially.
But those are under the instructions of the spiritual master. And so whatever we do now is under the instructions. Not that we're concocting something, but we're following Srila Prabhupada's and his followers' instructions. In that sense, it's not artificial, it's accepting the instructions.
Okay, I see.
Thank you. Any other thoughts, comments from the men's side? Deva Prasad Prabhu?
You mentioned earlier how the Srimad Bhagavatam is a person's sole purpose is to glorify Krishna. And Certainly that's true, but in some cases it seems that Bhagavatam is more interested in glorifying Krishna's devotees than Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And the example that comes to mind is the pastime to Prahlad. There's two or three chapters glorifying Lord Nrisingadev. Mm-hmm. And then there's two or three times that many chapters glorifying Prahlad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I haven't looked at the whole Bhagavatam overall, but it seems like Krishna takes more pleasure in glorifying his devotees than he does in being glorified himself.
Yes, that is so true. We see that in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes too. Lord Chaitanya very much, he's so happy he's glorifying the devotees. So yes, we see a lot of glorification of the devotees. And then we have the 10th canto, which has like 90 chapters or something of glorification of Krishna. But then they're also glorification of devotees. Although those chapters, 10th canto, is glorification of Krishna, but Krishna is never glorified on his own. Krishna is always glorified with his devotees. And the glorification of Krishna is with his devotees, even that. So yeah, whether it's a glorification of Krishna, whether it's a glorification of the devotees, it's glorification of the sweetest, best, juiciest people. It's Krishna and his devotees. Yeah, yeah. So nice. Yes, Bhagavati. We'll finish after Bhagavati's comment. Nandini? Okay. Mm-hmm. Not Nandini, Ananda Kishori. Yes. Yes, Bhagavati.
Yeah, no, just Krishna is the most. The Krishna who's the most wonderful with the four qualities that even Narayan doesn't have, one part of that is he's always surrounded by.
Very good. So Krishna, who is the most wonderful, he has four qualities, and one of them is surrounded by his devotees. And Krishna, you can't separate Krishna and his devotees. Yes, Ananda Kishori. Not Nandini, Ananda. Ananda Kishori, yes.
Thank you. Thank you for the nice class, Mataji. I have a question, just based off Mother Sukhada's comment on how the Paramatma guides, and it's not just a plain intuition. And then you mentioned that it also depends on the degree of purification that one can actually say that, yes, Paramatma is guiding. But, there are many times, in our devotional life, of course, we want to increase our spiritual activities and decrease as many material activities we're doing. And in the process, we may have many desires to want to serve in certain ways, to want to, do certain services or read, books. Like, say, I may have a desire that I want to finish Bhagavad Gita in a certain time span. We get these little few, sometimes we're fortunate to get those few spiritual desires sprouting up.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we know that, usually in our devotional life, we wait for the instruction of a senior devotee and to guide us to that this is what you should be doing, this is the next step. So how do we know this is our intuition or this is the right thing to do next versus this is the right service to do next versus, wait for that, the guidance that this is what you need to do next. Is that our Paramatma or is that?
Well, I can just say from my personal example and from what I've heard is that to know that, to verify whether this is my own, mind saying or is to always consult with other devotees. Devotees who are close to you, that may be mentoring you, they're your seniors, but that who know you very closely can help you to say, okay, well, it seems like, this is the direction you can go. Now it's a good direction to go. I remember when I had some
question after I came from Vrindavan, and I had some thoughts in my head, and then I did ask, you know, Satyam Raj whether, and he said, no, this is not, you know, he said, this is not for you. He said, this is what you need to do, you know. So, yeah, so if you're somebody who's close to you, you inquire from them. That's one way. Okay, we shall end now. It's past time. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your kind attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya.